So I'd like to talk about being your own light. There are these two ways of understanding. One is Buddha saying, be your own light. And he never answering any question around God. There is a wonderful book that a friend of mine wrote called The Silence of Buddha. And as reading through the book, it's just I kept feeling the big love, the big devotion that Buddha had for God, actually, by never saying yes, there is God, or no, there is no God, just keeping quiet in that question. And it just feels very, very wise that he actually did that, because he was in that time when in India was all these Vedas and priests and things around religion getting complicated. Only the one with certain authority could speak about God and had the right to say who is God, and the rest had to just hope to have some good meeting or good interview with those priests to get any glimpse of what God is. So in that context, someone popping up and saying, it really doesn't matter if there is God or not. Just be your own light, like do what you have to do, you know. And the rest will come, it will happen. Don't forget what is in your hands to do. And then there is the idea of Jesus just saying, it's all about God. It's all about God. There is nothing you can do, it's all in His hands. But actually, I think they were saying the same, because Jesus was actually saying, God and me are one. So that's the end of the story. Where is God? You know? Where is this God like that we are trying to point to? If it's not something separate. If it's in, can we say that is, or we can just say it's not? If it's in, I don't know if it's or it's not. So this being your own light. There is a beautiful sentence in this poem that I tend to speak a lot about also, even though I haven't done it for a while. So, the dark night of the soul. I think hugely misunderstood, but that San John of the Cross wrote is a Spanish mystic. And at some point in this poem, just says like, sin otra luz ni guía, sino la que en el corazón ardía. Without any other light or without any other guide, but the one that was burning in my heart. And he keeps on saying, that light in my heart was more certain than the light in the middle of the day. It was so bright, so clear, so reliable. And he's saying this line, this sentence in what to many people seem the darkest poem ever, you know, the dark night of the soul. And we many times speak about when we are little or a lot sad or whatever in the spiritual realm. Some would say, ah, you are just crossing or passing the dark night of the soul. Kind of, don't worry, will pass away, you will survive. But actually, the amount of light, the amount of potential and beauty that he is describing, St. John doesn't describe it in any other poem that well, that clear. So in this, I have no clue where I am. In this, I went down there where I couldn't meet me anymore, basically, he's saying. And then, so in that context, and there was a light there, super bright light there. And that was guiding me. He had lots of trouble, probably because at that point he didn't call that light God. That was his experience. And when there is a meeting, when there is a mystical experience, there is nothing out there to refer to. There is like the schema or the drawing of the religion itself, like it doesn't apply anymore. So it's very tricky. And it's very beautiful to see how the mystics from all the different traditions, they just can have dinner together without any problem. While all the other ones that call themselves like religious, but didn't experience, couldn't have dinner together. So I'd just like to really throw this question, what it means to be my own light. It just feels that it doesn't necessarily need to mean that I'm left alone. So we don't need to go the way Buddha explains sometimes when all the practices coming from the Buddhist tradition, like many of the big lines, only point to your practice, you know. Only if you do this and this and this, you will reach there. You know. And also no need to go to the extreme of God will solve everything. So what is this honesty where we can actually turn in and find our own wisdom and find our own way? Fully alone in this fully uniqueness, like in this unique way, where we didn't have examples. Like this is what it actually means to me, like to be unique. Like the problem of being unique is that we don't have much examples around. So because we don't want to face that, So then we prefer not to be unique, kind of to copy a little bit. So to really, like, what are we selling? Like, or what are we giving up, which is so powerful and so beautiful of us, just for the feeling of not to be alone? Or put it the other way, like, what are we afraid of when we look inside and see this uniqueness, this power? I see most of the time in our experience is really much more about this is not, this is not, this is not, this is not, this is not. Like, at least in my life, like, super clear, like, looking around and not really knowing what this is about, what the heart is, what to be myself is, but looking around and just, okay, I don't know what it is, but I know it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. And through the years, and after saying not 1 million things at the end, ah, maybe it's this, you know, so this, and this is what is powerful. And we see that is amazing and scary. And what it means to be open to being helped or being connected to that which likes to help, which is around. Sometimes we don't tend to remember that. We close our shell, I don't know what it is, shell, like a nut has a shell, no? Okay, so shell, and become unable to see the links, to see the forces or the energies that are knocking in our door constantly saying, hey, I'm here to help you. Hey, would you just open a little bit the door? I just want to come in. So this cracking or opening the shell to the bigger help. Some people use the word prayer or devotion. I think it's more subtle than that, or at least I think it's worth to scratch a little bit those words, you know, because they are little too used. So what is to crack this shell and to be open to those waves, you know? In India, they speak about the guru as the energy, as the bridge between your abilities or your part of the work in walking the path, and when it's not your business anymore to do any movement. Where you are taken, basically. We understand, again, the word guru, like, very badly, usually, like someone sitting there and, like, just like this all the time, as if a miracle is going to happen or whatever. So So, of course, in India and everywhere, it's really taken like this many, many times, where there is nothing really happening. It's just like the person and just like, okay, I'm not willing to do anything, so I better bow down to this person in case some magic trick happens and I'm safe, you know. But the guru, the word guru understood as this energy that works as a bridge, is a really, really, really powerful thing, and it's very, very, it becomes very, very clear when we practice deeply that there are those steps we can do and that are in our hands to do, and only we can do. No one else can do for us, basically. And this is what we call our spiritual practice. And then there is the soaking in, or the the power that takes us beyond. And it's two different things. And one thing cannot be without the other one. And I like to say many times that all our practices, everything we do, no matter how much we do, is actually this one step that we are asked to do. And that is different for everyone, and that involves different things for everyone. But this is this one step, even if we practice like 50 years or 10 lives, is this one step, you know. So that this lover can actually finally pop in our window and take us all the way. So this movement, all our spiritual career, is this one movement, no matter how much we do. But it's crucial. We cannot, like, there is no lover able to enter our heart without this one step of willingness, without this being available. We were speaking the other day, or without this intention of giving ourselves to that. And funny enough, also, at the same time, is unstoppable. So here I am saying, there is something we have to do, there is a force that is so much willing and so much waiting for us just to take us beyond. And at the same time, do it or not do it, there is the movement towards freedom that is happening, with or without intention. There are a few things here floating around. And there is, and this movement towards freedom is totally unstoppable, like it's inbuilt in everything, like it's, like, no matter how hard we try, like, it will not stop. Like, you know, it's like this. You know. So we are focusing so much, and in a way it's our job to focus very much in the part that is our business. We cannot really take care of the part that is not our business. We cannot take care of what is inbuilt. We cannot take care of the force that wants to take us, you know, the lover. But we can take care of our little step. And this is what meditation techniques and what spiritual practices are about, just to find the best way to do this step so that we are available. And to find the right practice, the right way to be available is something like super subtle or very, very delicate, I would say. Like, we can say, like, whatever helps, helps, you know, and we say this, and whatever works, works, and there are many things you can do. Yes, and at the same time, it's like going with a tiny needle, just trying to catch this other point as tiny as this needle in the whole universe. So it's pretty tricky. Like, it's really this one point that we have to match with this other, the whole universe. And I think that's why it takes an enormous amount of creativity and patience and willingness to actually find it. Find this tiny hole where this tiny needle would fit. And that's why I feel that practice itself and spiritual path itself is about trying again and again and refining again and again, even in every seat or in every session or every day, you know. Doesn't need to become an obsession, like, what shall I do now? But it can be, you know, like, what's the right attitude now? Like, what's really how to find this thread, this little hole. And it has a lot to do with listening to ourselves. I was speaking in the first talk about listening beyond the conditions, or listening or seeing through all the buildings that we build, so that we can see, like, the nature, what was there before messing it up, like, what was there before our addings, toppings? So it has a lot to do with that. Last winter, we were in India, like, every winter, and I did this workshop with horses, of course. The title was Yoga with Horses, but it's not about stretching. We didn't get into Hatha Yoga, but just, like, is the word that Sri Aurobindo means with yoga, which is like, yeah, anyway, spiritual growth. Aurobindo's complicated with his words, but I will try not to get into that. Like, just like connecting with the soul or finding the soul. with the horses or together with the horse. And it's this amazing work of being with horses that I was mentioning the other day, that it considers, or it takes in account, I don't know how to say it, like the natural behavior of the horse. So there is no pulling or pushing a horse. It's like, I'm here, go there, or kick you here, you know, it's not none of that. It's just like almost directing the horse or being with the horse and making the horse move, like almost like energetically, but basically what you do is stand in the right position, and when you are in the right position, then the horse does exactly what you want to do. And it's so amazing that I remember just standing there doing those exercises and just like being like this for it, like the horse is here and I'm like this, and the horse doesn't move. You know, the teacher does this and the horse does what, and I'm like, you know, come on. The horse stays there like interested in the carrots or whatever. And it's like, come on, I'm doing the same, you know, like, what's happening here? And it's like such a subtle thing, you know, like my arm, instead of 45 degrees, was like 47 degrees. Or something like as subtle and stupid as this, that you would never think that a horse could actually catch or sense, you know, it's like, you know, who can care about these 2 degrees, you know? But it was so amazing to tune into that. And the reason is not that the horse had been trained in this 45 or 47 degrees, but actually that this is how they lead each other, how they are with each other when they are together in a natural state. When a horse goes to pick another horse to help, like in a moment of danger or whatever, is exactly in that position with the other horse and no other position. So only by observing deeply their natural behavior, you can really move the horse, like doing exactly what they do in their natural world. So this level of subtleness is what I'm speaking about in the practice, you know. That sometimes we try something, it's like, oh, it doesn't work for me. It's like, how do you know? You know, you tried half an hour, you know, like, or okay, maybe exactly this doesn't work, but what about just retouching that, or recoloring that, or maybe what about just putting your right leg a little more like this instead of like that? So this amount of, how to say, like creativity or care or tuning in is needed to find that hole, you know, that needle meeting the hole. Mm-hmm. So there are many books and many words and many things that can help us basically to give new ideas of how I can deal with that, you know, what can I do to do this one step that is in my hands and only in my hands to do. And then at the same time is this constant refining, you know. It's like having a painting, like there, and is there, not being finished. So some of us, like me, like to start the painting now and finish it now in like 5 minutes. And whatever is there, I feel is untouchable. I just feel like I'm so, I would not add anything. It's just like that moment, no? And some other people, like Jaya, I'm going to paint, okay, paint. And then 1 week later, the painting is still in the same place. I don't know if it's finished or not. Could you put this away, please? I'm painting, like, but you didn't paint the last, like, you know, 130 hours. So this is the, you know, we are different, like our, we are different. And this is really like something to know. If we are like passionate kind of person that gets into a path and needs to read all the books about that path and meet all the teachers in that path and full on in as quick as possible. Or if we just, you know, need time. to let life tell us what to do. But it's amazing that they both work, you know. Like in the head would be like impossible, you know. But in the reality is how it is. So to tune into the fire is essential. And to tune into this amazing patience of leaving this one painting not finished and just keep on like retouching it and finding the right color. Not as a burden, kind of, I wish to finish now, but I don't find the right color. Like as a, you know, as a love affair, just, yes, finding this, like as an act of joy, like, yeah, and this is the right brush, you know. Anyway, I will not get into that. Hi. So we have given each other these days, like, hopefully plenty of time to enjoy picking our brushes and to tune into that which is important and to find, like, just to give time to ourselves to try this, to retouch that, to go deeper. And just to rest. And it is important to know that all which we are is going home with us. As far as I know, there is not a box in this house, in stone circle, the stone house. I didn't see the stone house yet, but anyway. This. In the stone house, there is not a box that says, leave here your authenticity before you go. Or leave here your patience and love for the silence and the aloneness to meet your own soul, like the aloneness needed to listen deeply. There is not a box for that, so you have to take all this with you. And it's going to be a little more challenging, I guess. Depends on our situations. But if we can remember that this, which we love the most, is with us. Didn't go away. And it's not planning any trip far from us. And to remember that many, many times to find our own light is just a matter of pushing the button of the torch. That sometimes we don't need a 1 month retreat. Too bad, I don't have the time. Oh. But sometimes we only need to speak with a friend or to spend some time among trees or swimming the swim in the pond, if you like to swim in the pond, or climb a tree if you are like more like monkey. And those things are available. And the torch, you know what happens at the torch also, you know, it feels that they run out of battery sometimes. Then to see, to really see what is in this darkness when we don't see anything. My Zen master liked to translate the word mystery, which sounds a little scary, into intimacy. Or the word, this darkness, or when we cannot see anything, we don't find the batteries of our own torch. To read that as moments of intimacy, where this tremendous solitude can meet. A deeper voice, or can just manage. And people speak a lot about the importance of the daily practice. And I do think it's important. But at the same time, I'm a little suspicious of that. Because I see how much let's say hope, like little fake hope it brings, and how much frustration it brings. It brings a lot of hope because we think, okay, so then it's all about doing my practice every day, so I'll do that. And I'll be fine. I'll keep going with that. So this hope based on an idea, basically. And then, of course, a big frustration when I'm not able to keep up with what I promised to myself that I would do. So I see many of us spending years in this kind of hope, frustration, then it's too frustrating. Oh, I go back to a retreat. Oh, now I will do this, 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 this. Going back home. And like this, years and years, as if like building everything around this intention for practice that usually is much higher than what we actually have time for or we actually are willing to do. So it's really, really important to find the right balance with that. And to really be honest with ourselves. I know I'm not going to sit every day at 6 o'clock in the morning before going to work. But I could go for a walk every day. Or I could create a corner in my house for painting, or for writing, or for listening to music in this meditative state. So finding our own tricks, basically. Not hopes, but kind of day by day, what worked for me, what is helpful for me, and what is inspiring and juicy, better than what is boring. Because we are, I mean, you know, some people have a very strong willpower. I have no sense of that, so in that willpower, like they can just push it, push it, push it. But most of us need to feel some juiciness in what we do in order to keep it doing. So finding that juiciness and finding really being honest and tuning in and asking ourselves, like, okay, so what do I love to do? You know, what could keep me alive, you know? And letting this natural questioning, this natural inquiry come in, like, be there. It's weird that we find many times that we need to push the inquiry, that we need to push our practice. But actually I remember, and I'm sure like other people do, like being a child and just like not able to get rid of this inquiry. Just not able to get, not only like I want or not, I just don't want this, you know, like in every experience, in anything I would see, just the question, you know. What are the stars, you know? What are they here for? Like, why? How is it the water is water? I mean, how the green is green? How we walk? Why we walk like the way we walk? We could walk upside down. So awakening a sense of this kind of childlike wondering. Like it actually is a very, very natural thing in human being. We just forgot about that and don't dare to ask this anymore, you know. But it's there. So why not to awaken that, at least privately? Or what the people we know could understand if we ask these weird questions. And to really trust that this which we are doing and this which we are wishing for and moving towards is not weird and is not also, it's not something, it's not like a decoration for for us. It's not like an added thing to being human, but actually it is being human itself. So how to approach those questions and how to approach our practice with enough relaxation and enough seriousness, like taking it fully, like in our everyday life, like taking it in, like fully. This is our chance, you know, this is our chance. It doesn't matter if there are more lives or not more lives. Like this sense of having all the time of the world, like just having all the time, and at the same time, the urgency for change. This can live together. We don't need to only be activist or only be like sitting in a chair. Like how to combine this in our lives, you know, like how to bring this together. Is there any question? It's a good question. I don't know.
You have a system.
I don't know. I know I put the clock here. I don't, like, some point, but sometimes I'm really, like, far gone. And open my eyes always, like, 2 or 3 minutes before bell. So, like this. Yeah. And I think now we are just used to, like, this happened, like, I never had, like, oh my God, half an hour passed. So it could happen, totally could happen, but based on that never happened, why it should happen, so. Actually, one time I had to came in to come in to wake up Jaya, but that was fun. It was in these last 2 years when, you know, our sleeping is gone, pretty much gone. Okay, so please don't push or pull the horse. Because there is a much fun and easy way. we may all find our own light. And by finding it, just allowing everyone and everything to find their own life for fun.